I want to say, first of all, that I am fully aware, and I think to some degree well oriented, in the fact that we can search in the New Testament from the first chapter to the last, and we'll not find one holy day that Christ told the church to observe, except the first day of the week when you come together. Now, I imagine more than likely our minds may be racing about this and that holiday and that holiday. They were all instituted by men. Some of them borrowed from the pagans before Christ was ever born and integrated into the quote Christian church. So I'm aware of that, and that one day is not to be put above the other. Every day is a day of thanksgiving to the Lord. It'd be interesting sometime to go into some of the history of the holy days as revered today is where they came from, but that's not our point. Today is a national day in this country and many other countries called Mother's Day. I realize, and again I acknowledge with you, that no matter how dearly you love your mother, you didn't come here to worship her. I know that. But I want to talk to you on the sacred office, institution of motherhood. Not that I don't have plenty of scripture to build upon. And I have been thinking about some of the scripture that has reference to mother. And I want to just read the first time the word mother was ever mentioned. In the second chapter of the book of Genesis, I'll begin reading with verse 23 in order to get into it. And Adam said, that is after Eve was born, and Adam said, this is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She shall be called woman, because she was taken out of man. I want you to hold the word woman in your mind. Now I want to get verse 24. Therefore shall a man leave his father and his mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh. I want you to look at think about the word first, woman, and then mother. And we find in the order and the sequence written, the woman came, she was a woman, Eve was a woman before she was a mother. Well, that may seem like a little elementary statement, but it's not. But I want you to notice here, Adam said, shall a man leave his father and his mother? At that moment, there was not a mother who had given birth on the earth. But she was predicted to come as a mother. She had not given birth. There were no children. But she was called Eve, meaning she is the mother of all living. Mother. I think it's interesting, and I have done this in the past, to look at different names of different languages and the word, our word, mother. And no matter what it is, it all means mother. mother, before there was any children, Adam, given the insight that God gave him, knew there would be children, and she would be the mother, Eve, the mother of all living. Now that simply means all living children, human children. That's just that simple. It's profound, but it's that simple. Now, I call your attention all over to the next chapter, verse 3. Chapter 3, verse 20. And Adam called his wife's name Eve. Now remember, Adam named her. She didn't have a father to name her or a mother to name her. So Adam named her. And by the providence of God, he called her Eve. Because she was the mother of all living. Not one child had been born and she was kept the mother of all living. And unto Adam and his wife, well, that's when they stand and make skins and so forth. I don't want to get into that. But now we see the first mother. She was called mother before she ever had a child. And she's the only one ever in that position. But now let me read here, and you know this, but let me just call your attention to why she was called mother. Now, chapter 4, next chapter, verse 1. And Adam knew his wife, and she conceived, and bare Cain, and said, I have gotten a man from the Lord. Now we see a living, walking mother by experience. She had given birth to the first child ever born in the universe. Now, she is a mother with an emotional attachment to a child. That's where it started. And that emotional attachment that had its beginning in Mother Eve and Brother Cain. That attachment has never been loosened in motherhood as it came down to this very hour. But this was the first mother that ever grieved over the activity of a child. Because she had another child and another child, but one of the children was named Abel. He was the second child. Now we have conflict. We have two brothers. And isn't it a sorrowful thing that when there are at least two people, there's going to be conflict. Adam dwelt alone on the earth. I don't know how long, but I know God said it's not good that man should dwell alone. So therefore there was not found an help meet or worthy of Adam. Of all the creation, there was not a help meet for Adam. Sometimes we use the word help me. What that means is a help worthy of Adam. And now, he's alone for a while, and you know there's no conflict. And I believe from that state, from that situation back there, the only time in this world that there's perfect harmony is when there's just one person. As long as there's two people, there's going to be somebody blaming the other. Go back as far as you want to and all the upheaval. Well, it was his fault. It was his fault. Not my fault, it was his fault. Go right on back to the garden. Adam says, it's not my fault.
Yeah.
It's your fault. The woman you gave me, that's your fault. This woman you gave me, not my precious wife that I love, but this woman you gave me. Gave me this fruit that I didn't eat. Well, what happened then? She turned around and blamed it on the serpent. On back and on back and on back. What do you hear? It's the blame game. I hate to use that word. It's a worn out phrase. But it's so hard to find somebody to blame, isn't it? Oh, Social Security's gone broke. You know who did it? He did it. You hear that? He did it. He did it. Somebody new comes on and says, it's not my fault. I inherited it. That person's going to leave someday. Somebody else comes and says, well, that wasn't my fault. There's all kinds of stuff to blame on somebody else. Now she got two children. And she bore them in sorrow and pain. And when these two children were coming before the Lord, there was jealousy. There was jealousy in the heart of Cain. His brother brought the first into the flock, just like God had demanded. And the brother was jealous, because he had a better way. My way is better. It's cleaner. It's better. It's more appealing. And all of this is tearing Eve's heart apart. She was a mother of the first son, and she was a mother of the first murderer, and she was a mother of the first murderer that ever killed a brother. This goes beyond this, which I won't go into, and I don't want to speculate, but don't you know it's real? Don't you know if someone asks Eve, what happened to your first son? Well, he killed my second son. Where is he now? I don't know. The Lord put a mark on him, and he's wandering around. He's a vagabond. I don't know where. It was a sad thing. But a mother's love is established. And I want to just say this if I can. And I don't want to put a mother's love above the love of God. But I do believe with all of my heart that a mother's love is a reflection of the love that God has for His children. It is the strongest tie that we have. A mother's love, there is an emotional tie that does not exist in any other relationship. Now, I want to be careful here and not say dad doesn't love the children as much as the mother. But there is a sense in which he can't love them like she does. He does not have the emotional tie to that child that that mother has. And that's no reflection on him. I asked a question as I'm trying to work through some of this. And I won't go into the conversation, but I asked this question. Do you think a father's love is more harsh than a mother's? Do you think it's harder and rougher? And I was told, no, I believe a mother's love is just more tender. And I settled with that. I kept that. That's why I'm passing it on. A mother's love is more tender. Can you look back in your mind and the full reality of it and not draw a picture here that doesn't exist? about your mother must have loved you when you was a little child? Well, you know, one way you can kind of look at that. Have you ever seen a 3-year-old have a temper tantrum? They kick and they squall and they turn flips and they do everything. And everybody's standing around saying, look at that. Boy, if that's my kid, you know what I'd do? Yeah, well, that's not the question. What did your mother do when you were 3-year-old and you were throwing one just like that? Now, when we get old, so not me, I didn't do that yet. We're 3-year-old. All kinds of things happen. But she says, I'll take care of it. I'll handle it. I read a very interesting statement about a mother, and I thought of my mother. It said, when there's 4 pieces of pie and 5 people, it's got 4 pieces. The mother always says, well, I don't like pie anyway. She puts people first. But why is this? It's God's institution. And when we look at it, and if I ever get into it, we'll see it's a reflection of God's love. And there is a connection. I'm going to say there's a fraternity among mothers. I've noticed sometimes in stores or in perfect strangers talking about something, say, yeah, my mother used to do that. That the tie of a mother to her child is never broken. I want to read something to you right now while I'm thinking about it. I want to tell you what this is. This is true. I don't like to read much that's not the Bible, but I do want to read this, and I want to tell you what I want to read. And tell you, first of all, that I had permission and encouragement to read it from the one that wrote it. So I'll tell you the background of this. To show you a mother's love. Last Saturday, we gathered at 7:30 in Cuerdo and had a graveside service for Mike Mallory. And Melinda, his sister, wrote this. I'm just going to read this one part. And it touched my heart. And it might touch yours because it speaks to facts of a mother's love to a child who was handicapped. I know that's not a politically correct word anymore. But he had polio and he had a hard time. I believe it was polio that brought him to where he was. Here's what she said. Now, let's just listen to this. My mother once told me a story about Mike that clearly illustrated how my brother persevered through so many adversities. She told me one day she was standing at the kitchen sink doing the dishes while at the same time watching out the window, keeping an eye on the children playing in the backyard. The kids were doing what all kids do at play. Running and chasing each other, climbing in trees and just being active kids. She noticed Mike quietly standing alone at the base of a large chinaberry tree, just looking up and studying the tree. She suddenly stopped her dishwashing and just froze, her eyes fixed on him. She knew what he was thinking, and her first instinct was to run to the backyard. Instead, she mustered all her courage and stayed right at the sink, eyes still glued on him. She watched closely as Mike set his small crutches aside and reached up for the tree. Having studied the tree at great length, he had devised a plan on how to reach his destination. And slowly began his ascent. She said, as she watched him painstakingly move up the tree, she wanted so badly to run out and help him, but she did not. She stood firmly at the sink, watching his every move. She said she knew the best way to help him was to stay away, as difficult as that was. Mike finally reached his intended perch, out on that limb of that old tree, and when he did, my mother said, he just looked down toward the ground where he had come and smiled a huge smile. At that point, my mother went out to the yard and praised him for a job well done and then helped him down from the tree. There were several lessons learned from that story, but the one that stands out at this time is how my parents' love and courage taught my brother he was no different from anyone else, and that he was truly capable of doing whatever one else could do. That's what stood out to her. The perseverance of a little crippled boy. But the lesson I got out of that as well was a mother. Doing her chores and looking out and watching the children. To see her little boy on crutches, and he couldn't do what others did, but he laid them aside and began to climb the tree. And I wondered how hard was it for Geraldine to hold to that sink and not go and help her little boy or keep him from climbing the tree. And when I thought about this, I thought, it's hard for a mother to turn loose. It is so hard for a mother to turn loose of her child. She may unfold her arms and let him go or her go. Watch them go off into an unexplored world. But I'll tell you, her heart goes with him. There's no place a child can go that the heart of a loving mother will not go with them. Mike climbed a tree, but his mother helped him down. How many trees, figuratively speaking, have our mothers helped us down from? So we wouldn't fall too hard. Mothers are mothers. Mothers are people. Mothers are, I look at it as a strong chain of love that goes out. But the chain is wrapped up in soft velvet. She is strong. And what she instills in her child will go on and on and on. In the second chapter of the book of Exodus, we find a mother who was a slave. She was born into slavery. That was Moses' mother. And there had been the mandate going down from the Pharaoh that every Jew boy that's born, you kill him. A crude form of aborting the male children. But the midwives came and said, but the Hebrews are strong. And the children are born before we get to them, so forth. And Pharaoh, thinking he was all wise, said, well, throw them in the river. That'll get them. Throw them in the river. Moses' mother. And when she saw him, she saw that he was a goodly child. And she hid him. This is in the second chapter. I'm not going to read too much here. But when she couldn't hide him any longer, she had to do something. She knew they were going to kill Moses, her son. And how could she keep him hidden from those who were searching for male babies to get rid of them when he would cry? There's no way she could keep him. And I'm telling you, sitting in her hut in the hot sands of Egypt, she began in secret to weave a little basket. It was an ark of bulrushes. And she pitched it with slime. And she fixed it what she hoped would be watertight. I know this is a passing event of history. But sometimes we need to look at the event. And here's what was happening. She would take some papyrus, some bulrushes, and she would weave them together. But I want you to think about this. Don't you know every stitch, every weave, every plait, whatever? She wanted it to be watertight. Because she knew that she was going to put her baby in that ark. I believe that every time that she would twist and turn it and pitch it and daub it, that she prayed, "Lord, let this hold." And then what did she do? She sent the baby down to the brink, to the brink, to the brink of the river, where the crocodiles were, and where all of this was, and where death was, and where Hebrew babies were thrown, and she put him in the river. Faith acts strange sometimes. Don't you know that naturally faith would say, go as far away from the river as you can get, but she took him to the river. Or had him taken there. And you know the rest of the account. She was drawn out by Pharaoh's daughters, the people there in the palace. But the little sister saw it. This is the scene. I know it's I'm laboring here, but this is the scene I see as a family scene. Little sisters love little brothers. Little baby brothers. Young babies. Maybe 3 months old in that category. And she stood and watched. And when they came down to bathe in the evening, they saw this ark that his mother, Moses' mother, had made, and they opened it. And the babe cried. And it moved her heart. I could just, in my mind's eye, see the little sister almost jump up and down and say, "You want me to go call a nurse?" "Yeah, go get a nurse." And she went and got Moses' mother. And Moses' mother nursed him, raised him in Pharaoh's palace. But don't you know there was some hurt? Mother's institution of motherhood is pain and sorrow and love all mixed together. I can see her in the darkness of the hut, hoping he wouldn't cry and be heard by the officers that were rounding them up, but she's weaving away. A mother's heart is knit in unity with other mothers. You know, I think it's an interesting account. This is in, I'm not going to read this account. 2 Kings, the 4th chapter, I believe you'll find this if you want to look at it later. But this father, this man went to work in the field one day. And he had a young boy that wanted to go, young son that wanted to go with him to the field. And there in the hot sun, this baby cried out to his dad. He said, "My head, my head." No doubt he had a heat stroke, or almost did, in the hot sun. I don't doubt that a bit. And what do you think dad did, the father did? He told the lad that was working with him. He said, "Take him to his mother. Take the child to his mother." I don't know how that sets with you, but that's exactly what dad would say if one of us boys got hurt. Go talk to your mother. There's something special about a mother when a child is hurt. I don't know what it is, but the presence of mother in a dark night, when you're not sleeping well, maybe she'll bring a drink of water or something. It's just something special about it. But God's love is so much greater than a mother's love. I found this poem and I wanted to read it this morning. I wanted to read it because I think it gathers up so many thoughts about mother. Listen to it. Her love is like an island in life's ocean, vast and wide, a peaceful, quiet shelter from the wind, the rain, the tide. 'Tis bounded on the north by hope, by patience on the west, by tender counsel on the south, and on the east by rest. Above it, like a beacon light, shine faith and truth and prayer. And through the changing scenes of life, I find a haven there. We never get too old. We never get too old to find a haven there. We never get too far advanced in life that we don't feel the presence of a loving mother. I want to, while I'm over here in the Old Testament, I hope I can turn to this. I know I've read it. I think it's over here. It's in the 49th chapter of Isaiah. If I can go briefly to the verse. Isaiah 49, I'm going to read, begin with verse 14. "But Zion said, 'The Lord had forsaken me.'" After Zion had forsaken the Lord, then she said, "Oh, he's forsaken me. And my Lord hath forgotten me." Now, verse 15. "Can a woman forget her sucking child, that she should not have compassion on the son of her womb? Yea, they may forget, yet will I not forget thee." You see, the best institution has those that run from it and do. And we know, we see this happen when a mother forsakes her child, and we wonder, how can she do that? Sometimes they do, the Bible says. But he says, I will not forget thee. I will not forget thee. God will never forget us. He will never forsake us. I said a moment ago that a mother's love is mixed with pain and love. Bound together, there's no way to separate either. It starts with pain, with travail. I want to read some from the 16th chapter of the book of John. Something I noticed yesterday, and I just wanted to read it to you. The disciples here, the 16th chapter, I begin reading about verse 18. But to give you a little background here, the disciples are saddened. They're grieving because the Lord said, I'm going to leave you, but I'm going to come back. They did not understand. Now I'll begin reading in verse 16. A little while and you shall not see me. And again, a little while, a little while and you shall see me. Because I go to the Father. Then some of the disciples among themselves, what is this that he saith to us? A little while, and you shall not see me. And again, a little while, and you shall see me, and because I go to the Father. But anyway, to hurry along here, he knew what they were reasoning in their mind, if you read on Daniel 5. And then he explains it to them. Verse 20. Verily I say unto you that you shall weep and lament, but the world shall rejoice. What makes you sorry, sorrowful, and weep and cry? Some folks are going to be happy about it. And you shall be sorrowful. But your sorrow shall be turned into joy. I want you to connect this with motherhood, birth, travail. A woman, when she is in travail, hath sorrow. Because her hour is come, that is to be delivered. But as soon as she's delivered of the child, she remembereth no more the anguish for joy that a man is born into the world. Don't you know that is the heartbeat of a mother? To go through the travail, the anguish, and the sorrow. And then when it's over, there's a sense in which they just forgive it. When they hold the child in their arms, the sorrow goes away. For the joy that they see, I just must get this one. Verse 22. And now, therefore, and ye now, therefore, have sorrow. It's like a woman in travail. You're weeping, you're sorrowful, you're lamenting. But it's going to be over pretty soon. Why? I just think this is so touching in the next 26. But I'll see you again. You're going to be sorrowful. You're going to miss me. You're going to see the crucifixion. You're going to see me buried. You're going to see my tomb. But I'll see you again. Listen, but I'll see you again, and you should, and your heart shall rejoice, and your joy no man taketh from you. I think this is such a wonderful statement. Just think of all of the turmoil that's going through their hearts, the sorrow like a mother in travail, all of these things happening, and then the sweet whisperings of the Lord of glory. I'll see you again. Is there something deep down inside the heart of the child of God who believes in the resurrection? Who believes in the blessed promise of life after this life? What gives you hope when we leave the cemetery? We leave because someone said that is seated in glory, I'll see you again. What better thought when a friend leaves? When you're coming back, I'll see you soon. I'm coming back. And then in the 19th chapter of, maybe I'll read that, of John. I think I will read that. It's just too good not to read. I want you to see the love, perseverance of a mother. There's so many more that I could go, like to go to. At the cross, and Simon Peter stood and warmed himself. That was before the cross, of course. And he denied his Lord. Denied that he ever knew him. But also, if we read on, we'd find that standing by the cross was his mother. And her sister, and Mary Magdalene, standing by the cross was his mother. The one that was predicted in Zechariah chapter 13, that the sword shall pierce thy soul. As she saw him on the cross, mistreated beyond description, that's when the sword pierced her heart. To see that done to the child that she had travailed in birth for. But he said, I'll see you again. In the midst of darkness and doubt and fear, there's something that holds us. It keeps us near the Lord when we think of the great love that He has put in a mother's heart. I close with this 31st chapter of the book of Proverbs. All down, I believe, the 28th verse. It says, her children rise up and call her blessed. I'm sorry. Her children arise up and call her blessed. How often during the day, perhaps, do we rise up in our mind and memory? Maybe not, you know, just actually thinking about things, but things come along and we rise up in our hearts and call our mother blessed because she was blessed to endure us like Mike. He tried to climb the tree and made it because his mother turned loose.